Welcome back. My name is Kaz.
This is Medibot.
And this is episode 38 of the Skulls Cast. Yeah. We're going to start off this episode with our segment, Skulls Asked, where you, the audience, you six or eight in all, present
Let's
us questions.
Seven. It's good average.
I think seven's a good number. Seven is a good average of six and eight. It's the arithmetic mean of six
What's
and eight.
What's the geometric mean of six and eight?
What's the arithmetic mean, then?
No, I said, what is the geometric mean? I guess it would be the square root of 48.
Oh, what? Yeah.
Which is, I guess.
Well, no, I meant, anyway, you can have, like, mode, in which case six and eight would be a, it would be bimodal, because there's only, anyway. Right. The segment. The point. The questions. These questions that I have in front of me. For example, listener Brindle Pants Esquire says, I have a Sharoom EDH deck that's gotten way too powerful according to my playgroup. It always warps the game around it and often wins. Should I start focusing on a new deck or tell my playgroup to suck it up and play better?
Well, the first question you should ask yourself is why are you using an asshole general like Sharoom the Hegemon? And the answer is because you want to play an asshole deck that wins a lot by being an asshole.
Yeah, with Sharoom that takes place with infinites, it's almost trivial to do this with anything that can copy Sharoom, and you just like... Get them both
First off, you got blue in your deck. That's warning sign number one.
Yeah. Kind of a warning sign.
Number two, like, known, like, good combo piece. I run Kraj as my general, who is a known weird combo piece. Not so well known for being any good at all, ever.
Without any fancy combos, Sharoom is just card advantage.
Yeah. Without any fancy combos, Kraj is a 4-6 for 6.
Yeah.
But given that you've already said you're winning all the time, and your playgroup, I'm guessing you're doing multiplayer games, so let's say the other 3 people, because all multiplayer games are 4 people, according to rules... So the other people in your playgroup are complaining that your deck is busted. Your deck is just... Its nuts are too hot, we cannot hold on to these nuts, and we really don't want to. So,
and they're doing absurd things like taking out powerful cards to replace with specific cards to hate you out, like Tormod's Crypt, or Leyline of the Void, or...
Like, wait, does the question say that they're doing that? Like, you're voting against it?
Relics of Progenitus. Well, that's... I mean, I read the complete text of the question.
Okay.
It always warps the game around it.
Oh, I thought... Like, that warps the game to the point of warping deck construction?
I take it to mean that.
Okay.
And that's sort of where my advice lies. If your deck is actually getting so bad that... you're stopping your friends from playing what they want to in favor of playing things that will be specifically good against your deck, that's probably too much. And you should tone it down a little or play a different general. Like, I played Arayo for the longest time,
and
no one ever got sick of it. Because Arayo isn't actually that good. It feels worse than it really
You feel like you're under this massive weight.
But that's not true. Certainly not anymore, but... Oh, it's good against Sheldon's deck, so... Away she goes. No more Arayo as
Goodbye,
your general.
Miss Arayo.
There went all of my fun. Because, yeah.
We started
anyway,
the assumption that Crush the Blood-Braided should be the best general. Ban everything that's better than it.
Yeah, seriously. However, I don't think that you have to like get rid of the entire deck in order to get more like fun out of your experience. And I don't honestly know whether or not you should or should not keep using Sharoom.
I mean, say, including, you know, you named a few pieces of graveyard hate. I guess I've always come from the perspective to always pack graveyard hate in your EDH deck because everyone can and will be doing something idiotic with their yard.
Right. I mean, are your friends playing real decks too? The point with a play group is to find their level and, like, play just slightly above it.
Yes. Oh.
So there are... Yeah, I mean, it took me a while with my Pauper play group. I had one bad deck, one combo deck, and one, like, good deck. And so, depending on who I was playing against, I would take out one or the other because I knew they were going to be playing something similar. And I wanted it to be an interesting match. So, play for interesting games more than you play for power, I guess, is the real answer.
Also, it's less work for three people to make new, more powerful decks than it is, or it's more work for three people to make newer, more powerful decks than it is for one person to depower their deck slightly.
Yeah. Or you could find new friends.
The other piece of advice I get the other people together would just be like, hate this person out. Always gang up on them immediately.
Yeah, that's when, like, everybody starts running Shattering Spree main deck.
Like red and green, like, basically the three colors that can hate artifacts start hating artifacts. The blue,
like,
player
start, like,
points all his
mainlining
you.
Questionable things like Withered Wretch, just to get rid of your infinites. Withered Wretch is pretty good, too, actually.
Yeah, that's...
He's alright to play in EDH.
That Withered Wretch is a completely real choice, not knowing your meta at all.
Okay.
But I encourage the other players, you know, to whine with their cards rather than their mouths.
By all means, if they can defeat you with the rules of Magic, then you shouldn't get angry at them.
Yes.
That's sort of my benchmark for that. Okay, so next question. A listener, Savage Legs, asks, why do gamers never want to spend a penny?
Well, gamers, of course, is an interesting term to begin with. Going off of my
let's take that for granted.
Going off of my understanding, it's because there's some combination of entitled and lacking in actual income, which is to say they are, you know, high school students, say, you know, they are not employed and do not have an income. So entitled, do not have an income, cheap, and have twisted perceptions of their own standards and of the value of the things they could be buying.
I think that gamers never want to spend a penny because most games are not worth the stuff that they're printed on. And they're way, 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 way overpriced. And so this is kind of a natural defense mechanism against spending too much on games, because all games are overpriced. So they're like,
I guess in that sense it is the correct overreaction when you see all these $60 games that are clearly not $60. You develop the habit of spending $0, and then when there's, say, a $5 game, you will say, why can't it be $0?
Yeah.
You know, I've seen people, you know, steal $2 games.
I didn't want to spend anything on Noi2 Love2. And I didn't.
And you didn't. It was a present from me to you. I spent money on it, and I don't regret the money I spent on it.
So
I feel good about the money I spent on it.
By no means are you and I immune to this, but I think it's all of those things, honestly. Really, games are overpriced. Gamers usually are that kind of person, and that's why there's this image of gamers being stingy.
Another factor...
We are stingy.
Another
whatever.
Factor may be the fact that there are many very good free games.
That's true, too.
And so I played
really
this level of game,
like, experience,
and it cost me $0, therefore anything not as good as this clearly must should also be $0.
Yeah, or being able to replay games, too.
Yes.
I mean, I have the same four copies of Super Metroid that I've had since, like,
1931.
Whatever. Wait, 93 might be too early. Also, I didn't have all of those copies at that time. So let's just say I've had them since the turn of the century. So, yeah. And I can replay them and get a really good experience out of it, because it's fun. And I don't have to spend money doing that. So I equate the money spent to the experience that I get out of it. And that sets my, like, price point at zero to start
with. The experience of playing Super Metroid costs you nothing because it is, in fancy economist terms, a sunk cost. You already bought the game.
Yep.
It doesn't cost you anything to put the cartridge in the SNES and boot it up.
Mm-hmm. And that's why gamers never want to spend a penny.
Gamers never want to spend... Because they also think that... because there are so many bad games... They imagine good games, and nothing meets the qualifications of their imagination. And therefore, I refuse to spend money on this game that is not as good as I imagine it ought to be.
So we start by making unreasonable demands on reality, and then asking it to meet us halfway?
We ask for infinity, and it says, I cannot give you infinity. It's like, well, okay, let's meet in the middle.
Yeah.
Say, wait a second.
That's actually a famous quote, but we'll get back to that at a later time. And that's Skulls Asked. Hooray!
Gamers are cheap and stingy.
Gamers
punch
are
them.
Cheap. And that's why. Don't punch them.
With
that's,
words!
That's rude. You are free to use whatever words on people that you wish, as long as they are not slanderous or threats. Do not threaten people. That is the very bad. Anyway, and now we come to the topic of tonight,
oh, no.
Which will be a lengthy question that I
don't know what it
Medibot
is.
On
the cast
and that
members.
we both suss out. Okay. What would the ideal game be like? Would it have gimmicks? That's the question.
That's it. Just would it have? You can't just leave off with would it have the ideal game.
I can
game,
leave off with whatever I wish.
The ideal game is 2v2.
Okay.
like
basketball? Like 2-on-2 b-ball or something?
Well, I'm just saying that is a feature fact? Of what I imagine to be the
okay.
ideal game is a 2v2 game.
Hmm.
Because it features cooperation, but in a very tight manner that is easy to exert individual control and communicative skill over. And also features competition, again, in a tight and understandable way. As soon as you add a third player to your own team, communication becomes suboptimal. As soon as you have a third opposing force, you know, a third team to play against, it turns into yet another political maneuvering horseshit exercise.
Need that necessarily be a horseshit exercise, or could it be a good exercise? I mean, I stand behind diplomacy as a pretty good game, for instance.
When I tried to learn and understand diplomacy, what I found was that I had to memorize a whole set of conventions before I could even begin to think about the strategy. And that sort of turned me off to it.
Well, sure, and I don't play it either. Yeah. But I get behind it. I like it as a game. I like that it exists.
Well, diplomacy is a game entirely about political bullshit and nothing else.
Yeah.
So by focusing on that, dice. It can hone it and make it something worthwhile.
Yeah. We're trying to establish the ideal game. I usually don't like this kind of exercise.
No, neither do I, which is why I'm being as intentionally just off the top of my head, not thinking things through as possible.
Okay. But we're... The... A Skulls cast is like a... We have to... You're gonna have to put more than your toe in, matey. Gonna have to put the whole skeleton in.
Right, but I mean, I'm not thinking about what I'm saying before I say it, is what I mean.
Ah, fair enough. So let's get back to this 2v2 feature, you know, so this, and you're right, that would allow it to feature both cooperative and competitive aspects.
Yes. It features hidden information.
And other things.
As an important
the ideal game features hidden information.
Yes. Discovering hidden information about your opponent leads to an advantage in this game. This game... Let's see, what else? The controls should be... simple and...
How about intuitive and flavorful? Because those are also
controls being
good
flavorful.
Things in games.
I try to avoid
we're
putting
the
remote in my mouth.
We're talking about the perfect game here,
perfect
the ideal.
Game.
So of course, the controls are, or even maybe it's a board game. In fact, so
it's true. It's true.
There
I've
are
been
no controls.
Video game all this time. What I'm getting at, what I'm trying to cut out here. Every fighting game has controls that are too complex. What's this quarter circle charge motion bullshit? In StarCraft, I have to move my mouse around too much. And that's clumsy and tedious. What else? Individual instances of the game? Should be relatively short.
So whole play sessions?
Yes.
So what's the ideal length of time
10
minutes. Playing this 2v2? 10 minutes.
As the maximum.
Ideal game would last 10 minutes.
However, there should be... It is the sort of game where, between games, you can put real thought in to... And you know, with your teammate, discuss the game and figure out what will... be attempted.
So the various states should lead to stories.
Yes.
You can tell stories about what happened.
Yes.
I'm going to raise you to 20 minutes.
All right, let's go with 20
and this
minutes.
Comes from, and this is an ideal game in the sense that it is played by humans. Okay? Because
yeah.
I'm including that in the definition of the game.
That's true.
This
Most of my games are played by machines.
This game is played by humans.
20 minutes
and
seems
the reason
reasonable
I want,
once we're including... humans and not just machines.
Right. Well, I don't think that it is a game unless humans are playing it. I don't think that... I mean, yes, you can program an AI to execute the controls of a game.
Yes.
But it's not playing it.
What else?
Anyway, without getting into that discussion, what I'm saying is the 20-minute thing is ideal for... average human consciousness.
Okay, I will take your word
after,
on that.
After about 20 minutes straight of like listening or trying to absorb a topic, you'll get distracted. You need a break. Mm. Shorter class sessions are better. Changing topics is better. PowerPoint presentation going on for longer than 20 minutes, you'll lose everyone. Let them take a break. This is advice for teachers. This is advice for humans. No human is going to be able to pay attention to you for 20 minutes unless they are in love with you. And even then, it's probably more like 5. So, give them a break. But short, I think, is the ideal that we're getting at. The ideal game should be short.
The game should, as much as possible, avoid segments which are guaranteed to be repeated from game to game.
Okay, we want to avoid repeated game states.
At the beginning of a game, of your RTS, there's no interaction. You harvest, and you build before you interact at all. And that's okay to have, but I'd like to minimize that.
Yeah.
You know, you say, I want to, you know, my opening is X. And it takes 8 minutes to say that.
Right. I give a withering sigh to that because, yes, in watching lots and lots of StarCraft II replays, it's like there are, by now, the established builds for each race, and that's, like, down to the second mark and the supply count. This is how the opening is, and it doesn't matter who
it's
you are.
It was too well understood in chess. It's too well understood here.
I don't think it's too well understood in chess. I mean, yes, there are lots of established openings, but have you ever actually, like, read that stuff and learned about chess?
Yes.
Isn't it crazy?
It's crazy. But I feel so like, okay, it, great, though. Here's all this crap I have to memorize to, like, begin playing a game of chess.
Right, because there was so much of it. Because there were so many different possible openings.
Right, well, in chess it's less of a problem. Because going through the motions of the opening will take, likely, 30 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, both players have their opening in mind and perform it, and, you know, both players understand, you know, at the high levels of chess, this is simply an understood fact. It makes the game less approachable, and I guess that's the actual problem, rather than boring.
Make high-level chess approachable? Okay. So is the ideal game approachable? Since we're talking about that. And I am thinking yes. Because so far we've been talking about, like, controls being very easily understood and intuitive and direct.
In the ideal game, the challenge comes from recognizing patterns in the... recognizing the meaning of a game state. And perhaps a sequence of game states. And that sort of thing is, you know, that doesn't make... This is where we get to the part where players can make different decisions. Some more correct than others. Some... And part of that correctness may be unknowable due to hidden information. Some of it may be a guess. You say, based on the information that I do have, and based on my understanding of what the information I don't have could be, I make this choice.
It's really hard to speak in abstract terms about that kind of junk. Because, I mean,
when I was a student of computer science, and I took a class on artificial intelligence, and I took a class that briefly delved a little bit into game theory, and we also, in the artificial intelligence class, something we discussed was the idea of deterministic versus stochastic environments or games, and complete information versus incomplete information environments, or, you know, in this case, again, specifically games. And what interested me the most were actually deterministic games of incomplete information.
Okay, so that's the ideal game for you.
It's the ideal... I don't know if it's the ideal game for me to play, but it's the ideal game for me to think about.
Okay, but that's not necessarily what we're talking about. I think you've been leading me astray up to this point in that case.
Do people other than me have to enjoy this game? Or is this game played by, like, myself and my three duplicates?
Actually, I think that's more entertaining and more ultimately discussable, so yeah.
Okay.
Let's go on with it, sure. Incomplete information.
Okay. I hate losing because I whiffed an input. I hate that. That's bullshit. So I don't want to ever lose because I whiffed an input.
So you don't want to have to practice for something?
I don't want to have to practice performing an input.
Okay.
What I want to practice is understanding the movement of game states. I want to lose because I zigged when I should have zagged. And okay. In hindsight,
so how,
I could have,
much,
you know, it, had I, you know, maybe it was a situation where I had no idea whether to zig or zag. Maybe I thought it was a better idea to zig than to zag, but maybe my opponent has specifically been feeding me some of his hidden information in such a way that I thought it would be better to zig.
Okay, so in this game, why 2v2, though? Since I've learned more about this ideal game, why wouldn't it immediately be in the interest of a team to share all of their information and simply act as one agent?
In this game, it is not possible to always perfectly share information with your teammate.
Come again.
Communication is a resource.
I see. In the sense that natural language is ultimately an imperfect conveyor of information from one mind into the other, so we're invariably playing telephone game with one another, or a resource like you get to call your buddy on the phone for one total minute, and whatever you can pass between each other in that time is what you say?
I mean, much more like the latter, where there are
okay.
features to the game which make it so that you cannot... It is not the same as simply melding your minds together and having a single player controlling two agents within the game.
Okay. I mean, that's a necessary distinction, but I don't like the idea of communication as a resource. Not as an ideal game, and not as an ideal game for you either. I think that you would get frustrated by this very quickly.
You think
so? You are very used to... speaking freely with your allies. It would have to be a really compelling feature. For instance, okay, take the times that you and I have played Diablo 3, okay? Compare the times when we were not on Skype to the times when we were. The Skype times were so infinitely better.
Yes. Because we had better communication.
I am not stating that as like I'm looking into your mind or whatever. I'm stating it as a fact.
Yes.
I don't need to just feel my own opinion
on
it.
No, like, when we were able to communicate on Skype, it was better. What if the opponent, through a series of moves that is possible to defend against, turns off Skype? Says, no, not today, Medibot.
Then I would, if I had any idea that they were doing that or could do that, I would find Ventrilo or call you on the cell or something.
In this case, Skype is our communication means.
Sure,
it
but
can be attacked.
My point is that I would make every attempt to subvert it.
Like, through means outside the game.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's why I don't like the idea of communication as a resource. Because
Does this game have to be an actual game, or can it still be like a magical theory game in a world where the player cannot simply say, I subvert your communication limiting mechanism by using a real piece of software?
I'm interested to find out where you're ultimately going with the communication as a resource thing, so I think we'll suspend the drive of human
information has value.
Information.
Is where okay. I'm going with this. In a game of limited information, if I can have more information than my opponent, I am likely to defeat my opponent. all other things being equal.
Right. I mean, you have more.
Therefore,
more advantage.
Given that this is a game where I must cooperate with an ally, it is in my interest for my ally to also have as much information as is possible.
Right. So you want your ally to have all of your information.
Right. What if I can't give him all my information, but can only give him some of my information, and I must choose what information to give him?
I mean, that's... If we're no longer talking about information, but if we say game resource, that makes total sense. Right? I'm not allowed to give all of my game resource.
Yes.
However, when you give someone information, you don't lose it. You still have that information yourself.
Yes.
That's how information works. So we have that point of contention between how every game resource works and how this specific game resource works.
Right, okay. I just had a thought relating to this.
Okay.
Let's say in this game... One thing that is beneficial for a player to have is an object, let's call it a blueprint. When you have the blueprint for an object, you individually are allowed to construct that object, you know, in the game world. And I individually find this blueprint, and let's say I found 3 blueprints. And then we say, okay, you may, you know, send 2 blueprints to your ally. You may still continue creating all 3 objects. But of these three, choose 2 and your ally may now also create them.
Okay, well, that's less like information in the sense that I can't talk that game feature to you through Skype.
Okay.
So there's still some... I actually like that idea, though.
Okay, I guess that's sort of where our discrepancy is happening, I want information to behave like this blueprint object, in that you may copy it to your ally.
Okay.
But you may...
And up to that point, I had interpreted information as just... talking stuff.
Like, if I...
Things that I can do through an instant messenger.
You know, you can see part of my map.
But in the... As a blueprint, it's far more like a game resource.
Yes.
And then, sure, we can make rules for exchanging the game resource between opponents. This is all an extended bit from... my asking for justification for their being allies rather than a single unit. And if we're exchanging things that way, then I guess we can have allies rather than just one team. Yeah. Yeah, if you have independent sets of resources and restrictions on how you can exchange resources, and for whatever reason your ally can make better or different use of them than you could, then that's a reason to have allies in your game. So, for example, if we characterize this game as... what is that game called... where you're, like, a child and you command armies and it's, like, Fire Emblem because it's made by the same
Advanced
people.
Wars.
Okay, Advanced Wars. If we characterize it as Advanced Wars for a moment, each of you and your ally could be a different commander and therefore capable of using resources in different ways, and, like, your soldier is better than my soldier, but it costs the same, and my tank is better than your tank, but it costs me the same, so, you know, we could... pass between us to maximize our, you know, your soldiers and my tanks. That kind of thing.
Yes.
That kind of information exchange. Okay, well, that's a good reason to have allies, and that's why it's a 2v2, I guess.
Fill all this shit out. I just want to play Dreamland 3 again.
Think so?
You want to know something kind of hilarious? And by hilarious, I mean twisted and idiotic.
I'm wanting less and less to hear about it as you continue to describe it.
Oh, it's miserable.
Lay it on
absolutely
me.
Terrible. I had a bad experience with a video game last Thursday. And since then, I have not played a video game.
Okay.
And I've been doing my best to just destroy the idea of playing video games from my mind.
The mind commands itself and meets resistance. I don't think you should try to...
I do not want to be a player of video games any longer.
Oh, I don't think that's the case. I mean, I go weeks at a time without playing video games just by accident sometimes. I don't feel like it. You know, I feel like reading a book, or I have too much work to do, or I have to, like, build something, have to help friends move.
Decades.
Have to find people.
This was my default desired leisure activity, was the playing of video games.
Oh, so this is new? That's like a new, unheard of length of time for you to be away from them?
For me to set out with the intent of just not playing video games for this long, and not because I am being punished by some authority figure in some capacity. Yes, this is actually new, to go a whole 6 days without this little baby playing his little baby video games.
Wait, why does it have to be... Take the baby out of that. Why does that enter into it?
I don't know, because I'm angry. I'm angry because I got mad at a video game, and that's something little babies do. They get mad at games when they lose.
When was the last time you met a baby?
On my definition of baby, I interact with them daily.
Years, in other words.
Baby humans.
Babies!
But we're getting off topic. Going back to the topic. Ideal game. Ideal game.
Fight
I mean,
me.
If I'm being perfectly honest, the ideal game is the one that I am the world champion at. And that I am always just one step ahead of whoever's second best at the time. That would bring me the most satisfaction, and therefore is the ideal game.
Huh. Okay, so we're measuring that
because that's,
ideal game
I,
in terms
I,
of
I,
the
like
satisfaction
of my
that it provides.
Own analysis of myself and what makes me feel good. I enjoy winning. But I enjoy winning close matches.
And yet, having observed you myself, I know you are often a really terrible self-analyst.
Yeah, almost entirely, like 100% inaccurate. Miserably bad.
What this means is that you would design this ideal game and then hate it.
Yes!
That would be awesome.
Yes, I would hate the ideal game.
I think we have to do it. It's just like... No, this has all of the features I talked about. It's perfect.
I don't want a game that's fair. I want a game that makes me feel good. That's what I want. I want to feel good.
Yeah, I mean, it's not wrong. I think it was one of the St. Francis of Assisi, I think. It was like, joy is the most sublime of human emotions. It's not wrong to want to feel good, in other words. I think that... the Puritans would have a problem with me saying that, but I haven't met any of those. So
Puritans could chew on it.
I come around.
I just want to... I'm hedonism bot. Mm. I want to feel good. I want to feel good all the time. If I'm not feeling good, something's wrong with the world around me, and I should fix it.
Let's see.
Well, someone else should fix it. It needs fixing.
2v2. Exchange of resources between allies...
hidden information.
Cooperation and competition. Hidden information.
Deterministic or close to it?
To the point of card counting? I mean...
No, card counting is lame because it just rewards the person who can best memorize a string of numbers. And I'm bad at that.
You don't want to reward... Oh, okay.
I mean, when I say mostly... like, Magic is a mostly deterministic game. Very few cards call on you to flip a coin. I cast the spell, and unless you play a spell that says, don't do that, my spell works.
Well, sure, but there's also deck ordering and the, you know, opening hand and mulligan rules.
And if we... and I believe are right to, and take also, deck construction, you know, as part of the game.
Deck construction, yeah. That's...
There are ways in which one can minimize or reduce the impact of variance or the severity of variance.
Yes. And that's the kind of thing that I bristle against in Magic. The current implementation of ways to reduce variance is monstrous. And it's only getting worse.
To wit,
being able to search your deck for whatever, that's no good. I don't like cards that allow you to search your entire deck. It's clumsy, it takes too long to physically manipulate and perform, and it crucially reduces that fundamental cool thing of Magic, the variance.
The windmill slam.
I
guess I'm talking less about tutors, and more about a deck that doesn't need a specific opening line of play based on specific cards in the opening hand to succeed. If my deck has a bunch of different things that it can be happy with doing in the opening turns, I am... You know, that, to me, that's the kind of variance reduction I'm talking about.
Okay, so like turning everything into a Jund deck. Or like,
kind of. It's the idea that I have a lot of cards that are good at different points in the game, and this makes my deck lower variance.
Yeah,
or I can choose to have cards that are extremely powerful at specific times in the game, and gamble.
I see.
That's okay. I guess the variance that... Also, the other thing is in tournaments, you are at the bare minimum doing a 2 out of 3. With sideboarding in between, which again reduces variance.
Right, if we're talking about the... Wait, what? Sideboarding increases variance. Your deck can be more total things and have more total states.
No, the 2 out of 3-ness decreases. As far as deck construction, you have more different possible decks. Where was I going with sideboarding being... It means you both have to plan for less and more, I guess. I don't know. Maybe I can't go anywhere with that.
Nah, we should just drop sideboarding. Because there's not going to be sideboarding in this ideal game.
But it's 2 out of 3 in the game of Magic. Because sometimes you do just get hosed. And we acknowledge that by giving it a 2 out of 3.
Yeah.
A game that I like to think about a lot, although I haven't... I guess from a... more abstract than actually thinking about how to play and do well at it, is the game of Stratego, which is a deterministic game of hidden information. Are you familiar with this, Kaz?
Nope.
Okay.
Total stranger.
Essentially, in the game of Stratego, you have a playing grid, and each player has the same set of pieces, each of which has a number on it. For the most part, when your higher numbered piece hits an enemy's lower numbered piece, the enemy's lower numbered piece is destroyed. There are a few special rules for defeating the highest numbered piece, and here and there to just make things a little more interesting. But the pieces all have numbers on them, and there are these little stand-up pieces, and the side with the number on it faces you, and the blank side faces your opponent. And you can put them down initially in any configuration you like.
Hmm.
And then you just take turns moving your pieces forward, you know, back and forth. When they meet, you both reveal each piece, determine the victor of the of that individual conflict, remove the losing piece, and then flip that piece back around. Although, really, it could even do without the flip that piece back around.
Yeah.
Honestly. You know, you're, at that point, you're relying on your opponent losing track of it, and that's not something I like a ton. But essentially, you start off with completely hidden information, because you have no idea how I've arranged my pieces. You have some information, in the sense that you know I have this many of piece A, this many of piece B, etc. Because we both have the same like army list, as it were. It's styled as an army. But then we just move pieces forward, and based on just what we know about our opponent, how they're behaving, how they're moving things around, we try and figure out what they're... And occasionally, just by going into conflicts and hoping for the best sometimes, we attempt to figure out what our opponent's pieces are and maybe guess at what some of their hidden pieces are, because our goal is to find the two flag pieces that the opponent has placed on their board. There's no nothing is a chance mechanism. Everything was decided by a player of the game and not by a die or a draw of a card or such. So anything you don't know is something your opponent does. And I like thinking about this type of game because there's the plain way to determine information, which is you start walking pieces into each other. This will definitely give you a piece of information. It will also definitely give your opponent a piece of information. That piece of information may very quickly become less relevant. You know, if I reveal a 3, you reveal a 4. It no longer matters that that piece was a 3 to you so much because it is gone. However, you can now see I have 1-3 in my defeated pieces pile, which means I only have 3 threes left. Whereas I know, there's his 4, don't run your 2s and 3s into it.
Well, what you described there is kind of an auto-balancing mechanism. Very small one.
So I guess that type of game is what I like to think about. The deterministic game of incomplete information. Which I would invariably be rubbish at. I would be terrible at playing this game, but I like to think about them. So it's not my ideal game, it is an ideal game. My ideal game gives me the sense that I am winning because I made good decisions and because I understood my adversary well.
So does it have gimmicks?
What's a gimmick?
I do.
Invariably, yes, because everything is a gimmick. Invariably, no, because none of this is a gimmick, because a gimmick is a derisive term to describe a play mechanic that you don't like.
Okay, taking it to mean an independent gameplay element that either vastly changes the pace of the game or suddenly makes you care about stuff that you didn't before.
That kind of gimmick. Could have like this wacky gimmick of turning off Skype.
You know, a gimmick Mega Man level, say, where water,
gimmick vehicle
jumps
level.
High.
Gimmick. Fucking and gimmick vehicle levels. Okay, so a gimmick, you know, we've established rules of the game, then for a little while we throw all that shit out the window and make you do something else.
Yeah, for 3 of those 10 minutes of your ideal game, we're suddenly doing something else.
You're cross-stitching. Okay. So no, I do not...
I mean, I'm guessing no.
No.
Honestly.
Because if my regular rules are really good, why would I want to do you all to do something else?
Yeah, and if those gimmick things are good, then why wouldn't we just
do that for
incorporate that into the regular game?
20 minutes or what have you.
That kind of stuff can fly in Mega Man games, say, because those have a sense of discovery and exploration. As you go from one screen to the next, you know, you don't know what's on the other side, so there's this cool moment where you figure it out. And by throwing gimmicks in, they keep you guessing as to what you might see or have to do next. And so it's kind of natural. It's best when presented in a way like a water level, where you jump really high in it, because he's buoyant.
And importantly, they start you off in an area where you can learn about the gimmick,
yes.
And then, as the level progresses, tests your understanding of the gimmick.
Yeah.
You know, a good water level is essentially that. We say, you're in the water now, and you're like, whoa, what? It's like, okay, you move like this. And then later on we say, okay, move like this really well or you die. Spike, 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 spike.
By the way,
nine.
There are spikes everywhere.
Fucking Splash Woman stage. Worked. Because they didn't start you off with a lot of spikes. But then, by the end of the stage, you were having to do some really rude shit with the water physics that you learned how to do in a safer part of the level.
Yeah. So, or the bit with the three elephants in Mega Man 10.
No, that's also in 9.
Is that
that's in
Concrete
Man stage.
He wasn't in 10. Wait. That was really Concrete Man?
Yes, where we had the elephants that would, like, send out the ball and then suck it back in.
Yeah, and then vacuum it back?
Yes, that was Mega Man.
Vacuum
that
you
was
as
Concrete
well?
Man. That was the demo level for Mega Man 9.
Oh, okay.
And in that, they give you first, like, a pretty basic scenario. Rolls the ball at you, then vacuums it back, but it vacuums you too. And then it happens, and then it'll, like, bounce, and then later there are pits.
Yeah, then he has a different ball, and then there are pits.
Yeah.
And,
like, by the time we get to the pits, it's like, okay, at this point, if you don't understand the ball, we're actually punishing you pretty hard. Not just, you know, a little slap on the wrist, minus 4 pips of energy. No, in the hole, try again. Mega Man 9 really liked to just put you in a hole and make you touch a spike a lot of the time. Which I think was ultimately okay. But those gimmicks worked because, again, they would start you off, like, every level had some gimmick, and the first time or two that you encountered the gimmick, it was safe to fuck around. You know, there's the pendulums in Jewel Man stage. At the beginning, you can just, like, mess around and see how they work. Then at the end, you have to do weird momentum tricks to not touch spikes. Concrete Man, you have the elephant. Splash Woman is a water level. Plug Man didn't really have...
Well, he had the lights thing.
He had the lights thing. That's...
So he had to...
Plugman had a lot of very different small gimmicks, where they were, you know, a unusual enemy that appears only in Plugman stage that has an unusual way of attacking, who is, in his first configuration, really bad at attacking you from where he is, but then later on, really good at attacking you from where he is.
Right, so that's a pretty brief description of how to do gimmicks well or poorly.
Yes.
So I think we've... I think we've fairly
so no, our game
that.
Will not have gimmicks, it will have features.
Yeah. Well, it sounds pretty good. And if we ever get around to designing it, I'll be sure to make Medibot play it at least 3 times.
I hate
and
it.
Then he can decide whether or not it's miserable.
It's so bad, I just want to play Kirby again.
I can hardly even wait.
Kirby's Epic Yarn was such a good game.
But thanks for asking those questions.
Thank
I'll
you.
I'll be sure to post... A reminder of how to ask us more questions in this Skullscast post, and probably also on the Twitter.
Postcast, cast
so
post.
Follow us if you don't already.
Twitter post.
You, if you are lucky, might win a signed Magic card, if you care.
Who signed it?
Signed by you and me.
Oh.
Because that's the, you know, because we're, like, famous, right? Among these, like, 10
I feel
people
pretty
who now
famous.
Listen to us. Whoa! Keep that put away,
yeah,
buddy.
Yeah, getting on the mic always makes me feel famous, Kaz. You know me. I just love attention.
Oh, mercy. And if any of that other stuff ever comes up, we'll be sure to put it in our skulls.
Skulls.